This whole area of precision agriculture, as we know, has been around for many years. And I, like most of you here, have been asking these questions. What is precision agriculture? How are we going to deal with it? And so on. And I thank Joe for bringing up the questions this morning about trying to define some of this. But in fact, for myself, I see it almost as important as being as a process rather than a question and an answer. Because when you go through the process of asking these questions and coming up with your own answers, many of these aspects become a little clearer in your own mind. Well, that's what we've been doing over these last few years, in looking to see where precision agriculture is going to go into the future. And that's what I'd like to draw your attention to this morning, where we're then looking at more automated systems and how these things will affect us in the coming years. And in fact, if we then try to project right the way through to the ultimate, then we might be able to see new ways of dealing with some of the spatial and temporal variability that we're dealing with now. So this morning's topic is then robotic agriculture, designing systems for the farm of tomorrow. As Reg mentioned, we're now managing, or we've set up a new project in Europe called Future Farm. And the aim of Future Farm is to develop aspects for the European farm of tomorrow. It uses many of the tools and techniques from precision agriculture. So we've been drawing from the experience that we've learned from over the years. The real challenge is to integrate the information systems. One of the things that's come up for many people is that as engineers and scientists, we've made agriculture too complex for most farmers. Joe was showing a lot of very interesting maps and data, but it's that level of analysis is going to be very hard for many farmers to deal with. So I think as scientists and engineers, we need to develop this further. We need to take it, allow it to become more mature so that it's easier for farmers. And real-time management support, cross-compliance for the single payment scheme, these are the legal requirements in Europe. Implications of biofuels, and looking at the socio-economic impacts. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about the robotics side of it now. But I will be presenting a paper at 8:20 tomorrow explaining this in a little bit more detail. So if we want to look forward, one of the things we should do perhaps is to look backwards. And if we look at what's been happening to machinery recently, or probably over many years, is that machinery is getting bigger all the time. We've got distinct advantages from doing this, that it's reduced labour costs per hectare, it gives us high work rates per hour, which gives us economies of scale. So these are the driving factors why machines are getting bigger. But we've also got disadvantages in terms of the high cost of the operator, high capital cost, and it's only good for the large farms or fields. If you've got a small field structure, it's perhaps not so easy. And therefore, we've got issues with flexibility, reliability. And we do have to consider aspects of subsoil compaction when the machines are getting that big. And in fact, this is almost an identical theory or background from what Joe was just talking about in terms of looking at the treatments within a field. So here we've perhaps got a conventional or traditional farming where we treat the whole field in the same way. But if we then have found with precision farming that we reduce the management unit's reduction of scale down to subfield, I then perhaps would say, yes, we can go to a scale smaller again, but not necessarily perhaps at a grid, but perhaps at the plant scale. So we've now got the opportunity to be able to use phytotechnology where we can actually come down to the plant scale husbandry to be able then to deal with some of these issues. And I think that we're in the position where we should not just try to invent a new robot or invent a new machine, one new machine. I think that we should take a complete systems approach. This is one of the major lessons that I've learned in my experience with precision farming, is that each of these actions has got a consequence, and dealing with just one part of it doesn't ever really work well. We have to think about it in a little bit more holistic, in a little bit more of a holistic manner. Branch,
can I have a glass of water, please?
So I think that it's an opportunity to develop a new generation of machinery based on plant needs. And it may allow us to do operations that we can't do now or find too time consuming or expensive. We can reduce the amount of energy that goes into this system using intelligently targeted inputs. Small area or plant scale operations. Reduce this compaction. If we do have the small units, we've got the possibility of modular units, and if we want to increase the work rate, we can scale them up. Cost-effective, incremental investment, integrated fleet management, and so on. There's a whole range of different issues if we're going to try to come up with a better system. If we look at aspects of energy, we look at the farm and where does all the energy come from? Well, it comes, of course, from the sun, and it comes directly to the farm in terms of light, air, and rain. But that energy has been stored up over many years in fossil fuels, which we also then use to be able to give us our herbicides, pesticides, and fertilizer. And then we also use the fossil fuels to go into the machinery, to build the machinery, and be able to power the machinery. And of course, the output is food. But we've also then got issues with off-farm pollution, wastes, and of course, lots of biomass, the crop products that we don't use. And we're now dealing more and more with the energy crops coming in and looking at biofuels. And then the ability to be able to use these biofuels to replace the fossil fuels in our machinery on the farm. But if we then deal with this concept of more intelligent placement, perhaps we can reduce the amount of energy coming into the farms from the fossil fuels, and therefore try to reduce or even eliminate wastes and off-farm pollution. And I think we've now got an opportunity of looking at these closed-loop systems on the farm to see if we can grow energy crops on the farm specifically to give us the energy that we require on the farm. And I think with the increasing costs of energy going up all the time, I think this is something that we should be looking at in more detail. So what are these concepts of robotic agriculture? Well, we've got the issue of multiple small intelligent machines replacing large man tractors. As I say, this is a hypothesis. It's not going to necessarily work in every case. But if we do want to have higher work rates, we can have multiple machines and they can work longer hours. We're dealing with the concepts of a robot shepherd. So perhaps we wouldn't necessarily take out the person completely from this closed loop in the field, but perhaps where a person will be looking after a number of these machines as they're working away. We need to deal with issues of safety and reliability, and again coming back to this concept of easy to manage, incremental costs, but to reinvent mechanization to give smarter machines that can care for individual plants. So what are the system requirements? I think they need to be lightweight so that we don't have compaction, not carrying heavy things around with us all the time. Small and autonomous. They've got to be smart enough to work by themselves. Small for safety. Computational and energetic autonomy, getting them to work by themselves over long periods of time. Dealing with concepts of weather independence and dependence. If agronomically we want the seed to go into the ground at a particular time of the year, but maybe the soil is too soft at the moment for the machines to actually get out there, then perhaps the new machines should be able to go at any time. And maybe even weather dependence, if we're going out spraying and the wind gets up, a manned operator will call it off for the day. Perhaps the robot can sit there and wait until the wind drops, and then it can continue by itself. issues of redundant system architecture and graceful degradation, we say that catastrophic failure is unacceptable. We have to have the machine so that it knows about itself and has a gentle way of breaking down, so that we know that one system isn't working, so therefore we can take appropriate behaviour. Communication, self-awareness, working at night are all issues to do with this system. What about the machine itself? Well, if we start out with a field boundary and we know the working width of the machine and the turning circle and so on, we can then work out where that machine should go beforehand. These are what we would then call, or this is what we would call, a deterministic task. It can be determined beforehand using a priori knowledge and can be optimized. And so therefore we can minimize the skip and overlap and so on. But then there is a second part to this, which is then purely reactive tasks, where how will the robot react to unknown situations? Well, we believe that there is a lot of possibility to be able to deal with these issues by using the behavioural robotics approach. And if a robot then comes across an unknown object, it doesn't necessarily need to have to recognise that object, but perhaps just to recognise the class of the problem and therefore take appropriate action. And of course, what we really need is the possibility to be able to bring both of these two together into a hybrid system to give us both deterministic and reactive behaviours. So in terms of the deterministic route planning, to be able to plan an optimal route to follow beforehand, so if we've got a shape of a field that is Okay, so got a shape of a field up here, which then is a peculiar shape. One technique is to break it down into sub-areas, and so therefore we can treat that in terms of straight lines. There are other groups of people that are then working on optimizing it through mathematical methods, and there's some interesting work coming out on finding out the best ways of skipping rows and of doing tight turning and so on. And the third way is the area that I'm looking at the moment in terms of using craft knowledge. So we can come up with a route plan that is automatically generated but based on the way that people design a route when they have a look at a field. Okay, so if we move on to the concepts of phytotechnology, I think it can be broken down into three main areas: establishment, crop care, and selective harvesting. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the ones in red here, looking at seed mapping, highly accurate positioning of seeding, and then moving on to crop care, mechanical weeding, microspraying, and lasers. We've seen that we're getting a lot of compaction when we're using big equipment, so we end up with the hard pan layer below the topsoil. And it's estimated that up to 90% of the energy going into cultivation is there to repair the damage caused by the machinery in the first place. 90% of the energy going into cultivation is there to repair the damage that we've caused in the first place. Now surely there are opportunities for us to improve this situation where we're getting such a large amount of energy going into agriculture because we've repairing things that we've caused. We need to I'd like to introduce you to some new terminology that we're using for this type of work. We can start out with a seed map. So this is the concept of where we know the position of every seed that goes into the field. The concept of a crop map, where we've then got emergence, where the plant's coming out and we're seeing some leaves And of course, the seed map and crop map may well be slightly different from each other. We've then got the concept of a weed map, not necessarily the position of every weed, but certainly of patches. And the area between the rows, we would then call the inter-row area. And the area inside the row, between the plants, is the intra-row area. And finally, that area is the close to crop, which is then getting close to the canopy or the root zone of the plant. If we look at the way in which we can do seeding now with a reasonably high accuracy seeder, we can add some electronics onto it. Pull my mouse. So up here we've got an RTK GPS, and we put some other electronics onto it down here, and some infrared light beams, and when a seed then drops through the light beam, cuts the light beam, we can record the position of the seed. We can go back out with a quadrat and machine vision and be able to take some pictures of the emergence, and we can then find that we can usually indicate or find that the seed and the emerged crop is within a couple of centimetres of where we thought that we had put the seed. So it effectively gives us a probability density function based on that location. And of course, there is going to be a lot of agronomic factors as to why the seedling is not necessarily in the same place where the seed is. We've got the concept of ultra-high accuracy seeding. One of the questions that I often come up with is, why do we grow crops in rows? Okay, it's a genuine question. Anybody care to say, why do we grow crops in rows? Perhaps you've never questioned it before. Anyone care to take a stab at it?
Cultivation.
Well, effectively, it makes it easy for the machine. Why do we grow crops in rows? It's there because it's easy for to make a machine to make a row, put the crops in it. But does the crop need to be in a row? Every plant wants to get access, equal access to resources in that area. So therefore, we need to perhaps think about other ways of seeding or seed spacing. And of course, we could then say we're getting equal space per plant over here. But those amongst you that can see it, of course, we're getting rows, but just in a different line now. So therefore, we perhaps can deal with issues of plant grid seeding, grid planting. This is nothing new. People were doing this more than 100 years ago. And we've got the possibility of then putting seeds into the ground at a grid pattern. And that way, we give the plants equal access to air and light and water and so on. But it also gives us the possibility for being able to deal with these crops in an easier way when it comes to weeding. So if we've got our plants on a grid and then we've got randomly distributed weeds, then perhaps we can go through it with mechanical weeding systems that will then be able to take out the weeds in both directions, which is a very simple operation to do. We can then move on to some of the concepts of improving the control of these machines. Here you can see our autonomous tractor working, and this video is showing the second toolbar behind the tractor, which then can move laterally, move left and right. And that way we can be able to get high accuracy control of the where the weeding system actually moves. We can look at robotics themselves, a little robot that we were developing a few years ago. This one's out in the field exploring. But if we can point the camera down to the ground, we can then actually look at the seedlings as they can go past with a video camera and be able to stitch the images together to be able to identify exactly where each of these plants are and identify them uniquely by their spatial location. Here we've got a four-wheel drive, four-wheel steer robot being developed in Denmark, and we can add on to this many different types of sensing systems, which will then allow us to get access to crop information. Field scouting is an important aspect of this work. And this machine itself is actually now going out and has the capability of going to some field trials and measuring up to 250 plots a day. This is replacing the work of three or four people, and it's all automated and very reliable and very repetitive. Again, looking at some other small machines, here's one from Japan, looking at broadleaf weed spraying with the cameras looking down, identifying the leaves, and then the spray boom switching on and switching off so that only spray goes onto the broadleaf weeds. We've got techniques that can be used for recognizing different types of weed. So this particular system can now recognize 26 different species of weeds using active shape recognition. And we can be able then to take that information and then feed it forward into subsequent treatments. And we're dealing with the concepts of micro spraying. Seedmap gives us the initial guidance points, so we know where the crop should be. And if we then pass over it with a camera and a small spray boom, we can then perhaps just only spray the weeds themselves. Here you can see the movie of the robot itself. The little device at the bottom there is a very small spray boom, and the camera is in front looking down, and we've got some simulated leaves on the ground, and what it's doing is that it's recognizing where the leaves are and only spraying on top of the leaves. And when this was done by a person rather than a robot, we found that through intelligent placement, the application rate of glyphosate, which was recommended at 720 grams per hectare, was then reduced to 1 gram per hectare. And the only thing that we've changed here is intelligent placement. Just looking at what is needed, as has been said, doing it the right time, in the right place, in the right way. This is exactly what we're trying to do here, as a person would do it, and then get the robot to emulate it. The application of farmyard manure can also be automated, again from Japan, a muck spreader that can go out by itself and apply according to a treatment map. The concept of a small agricultural robot has been with us for a number of years. An industrial design student came up with the Weedmaster a few years back. It doesn't actually work, it's only a plastic replica, but it shows us what sort of designs that the robots could be in the future. The mechanical weeding by hand is pretty arduous when we're talking about organic crops, and it's very hard for people to do this, but yet this is the way in which a number of these crops are actually weeded, and I think that we should be able to find better ways of dealing with that. So we're dealing with the concept of a cycloid weed hoe that can deal with both the inter-row and intra-row area and avoid the close-to-crop area. And a cycloid weed hoe has then been developed that can adjust itself so that it misses the crop lines. We can see it then moving into the field. So we're going both in the inter row and the intra row areas. It is getting a little bit too close to the plants. You're seeing that it's disturbing the root zone. And we can put all of these systems together even to a autonomous tractor on the front there with a side shift toolbar to increase the positioning accuracy, and then a cycloid weed hoe to be able to go down and do the weeding between the plants. So the purpose of all of this work, really, of course, it is to show the weeding, but it's how can we get an autonomous machine to interact with a growing crop plant to within a couple of centimetres without damaging it. Again, you can see this is too close to the crop plants again, but that's only a matter of adjustment. This was one of the very first runs that we did. In the UK, similar work has been done with machine vision and a notched disc, where we can use the machine vision to locate the crop plant, and then the notched disc then will rotate under the ground there, disturbing the soil, breaking the root soil bonds for the weeds, and being able then to control the weeds. We can use lasers rather than mechanical systems, and if we know where the weed is, we can then have a steerable laser being able to point it at the growing point of the weed to retard it, to allow the crop plants to overtake it. We developed a tree weeder, autonomous, in this case, Christmas tree weeder, where we're looking at the requirements of small trees so that the weeds don't overtake the trees themselves. You can see it here, it is with a side cutter, I think you call it a weed whacker in America. You can see how gentle it is, even if it is does touch the virtual trees, and when it's powered up, it draws the cutter back in so that it never actually touches the tree. We find that we can get this machine again to within a couple of centimetres of the tree. The lateral stability is very high with this type of machine. We put some guards on it and then put it out into the field. We can actually see that it has to guide itself down the rows, and the cutter then goes right underneath the trees and can cut out even quite woody weeds very close to the tree trunk itself. Other robots are being developed. The Hortibot is being developed in Denmark. So that was demonstrated at the field robot event this year. You can see that on the web. Again, a different range of tasks can be carried out. This one's got the spray boom on it at the moment. We've got the modular tractor was developed in the early 90s, but we didn't have the smarts to go onto it at that time, and that's what we're now trying to develop. There's no problem in terms of the mechanics or the hydraulics or the electronics, but what we really need to do, the challenge, is how to make a machine intelligent enough to work by itself. A number of you have probably already seen the John Deere tractor, or number of tractors that have been developed to be able then to go out and do these different operations. And again, in Japan, there's a number of tractors that have been developed for autonomous work, carrying out a number of different operations. We're trying to move this ahead. I've got a student project at the moment going on in Greece, where we then said, okay, we can build robots if we throw a lot of money at them. Can we build robots that are made by blacksmiths? So we designed a robot to be made by the local blacksmith. Here is the one of the early photographs of it that was built by a local guy. We still have to add a lot of the intelligence into it. There's a lot of expense in terms of the computers and the GPS, but the fundamental parts are not expensive. I'm preparing developing system architecture for agricultural robots. You can see some of the simulations going on here, And this is to encourage the development of robotics by other groups and students, and all the software to do this and the architecture is freely available from my website. And the little robot on the lower left side there, the grass cutter, is actually a real robot that is now being fitted with the actuators on it. And just coming to a conclusion then, I'd like to draw your attention to the next European Conference on Precision Agriculture, or now known as the Joint International Agriculture Conference, because a number of the different conferences are coming together at Wageningen next year. And if any of you or your students are interested in participating in the Field Robot event, that'll be held at the same time. So, in conclusion, I would like to say that I think it's obvious that equipment is going to get smarter. We're going to see improved automatic control of well-defined tasks, more automated data gathering and better processing into real information, with the possibility of fully autonomous vehicles with sensible behaviour in given context in the near future. But I believe we have the chance to design and build a complete new small smart mechanization system based on these precepts. Thank you very much.
Great, thank you.